Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. This is one of my things as a host. I can never remember the date. The 13th, is it, or the 14th? Ooh, we got some. Hello. what is today, Rhonda?
It's the 14th.
It's the 14th. Thank you very much. And this hour of the program, we're going to be talking about wealth inequality. Our guest has done an extremely interesting study that I heard about on the radio, actually, last week. Michael Norton is our guest, professor of business administration at Harvard University. And he has found out, be you a Republican or a Democrat, if you are very rich, if you are very poor, everybody believes that the wealth in this country should be more equally distributed. And we have a misconception about where the wealth is. And when we look at what we would like to have, it's not only Sweden, it's better than Sweden. So we're going to talk about that in just a moment. It's a fascinating study. We spend a lot of time on this program talking about economics and jobs and why the economy is the way that it is. So we're going to be looking at that in just a moment. It should be a fascinating hour. We are, as you know, listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is our fall membership drive, and we're coming to you on a day that will be our last request for you to support this particular program. Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our studios in Milwaukee, and we are here to raise money in support of the programs that you love. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The amount that you give is up to you. We just appreciate every single donation because every dollar that you give makes a difference. Please give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. Last hour, they had a goal of 70 pledges, and they only heard from 28 listeners. So this hour, we're going to have a goal of 50. We've heard from two people already, so we have another 48 pledges to go this hour to make that goal. Help us meet this important goal by making a contribution now at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552. And that gift ensures that the programs you enjoy here at each and every day on Wisconsin Public Radio will continue. Contribute now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, and I love this because these discussions only happen on places like Wisconsin Public Radio. Harvard professor Michael Norton will join us to talk about the income gap in America. And what an interesting question to consider today and for the days ahead, and that's what a difference it makes to live in a country that has a big gap, what difference it would make in your life to live in a country that didn't have as much of a gap, and would you want to live in that kind of country? Those are the questions this hour. Discussions like these, and I'm excited about this hour, and also to hear what you're going to say about this issue, they're possible because of your financial support. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we just got word from Pledge Central in Madison, some very exciting news this hour, that if we get 15 new members, Wisconsin Public Radio, they're going to give us an additional Herzing University has put up $1,000 to challenge 15 new listeners to call in and become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have one so far, so we need to hear from 14 people that are not currently a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. And this is a great hour to call in, or you can log on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help us meet our challenge this hour.
That's great. We don't get those very often, so please give this hour. And it's pretty easy to do. It takes just a few minutes of your time. Give us your name, your contact information, how much you would like to give, and how you would like to pay. Using your credit card saves time, of course, and it saves paper and postage and puts your money to work right away. Or you can consider signing up for EFT, electronic funds transfer from your bank account, which saves even more time, postage, and paper. I love when we have challenges. Herzing University here in Milwaukee will give us $1,000 when we hear from 15 new members. We have one new member.
That's right.
14 new members, am I right?
That's right. Hey. It's a good incentive. Perhaps you've been, you know, listening for years now, but have never called in during one of these pledge drives. And, it doesn't... there's no limit on the amount that you give to become a member. Anything that you pledge, you automatically become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. That's the great thing about public radio. So please, this hour, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks very much, Rhonda. Pledge this hour. Help us get that extra $1,000 because we want to get as much income as we can so that we can keep giving you wonderful programs. And I am very excited about this program. I heard our guest on the radio last week and came in and said to Rhonda and Christy, we always get excited about what's in the news. That's why we work for public radio. And I said, I heard this guy on National Public Radio. He's a professor of business administration at Harvard who has this incredibly interesting study where they asked people in this country, do we know what the distribution of wealth is in this country? And also they asked, what sort of society would you like to live in if you got to choose from scratch? Think about that because we're very interested in hearing your responses. They found two very interesting things. People underestimate what the actual level of wealth inequality is in the United States. And then when they ask, where would you like to live, where they think things are a little bit more equal, they say Sweden, but they want things to be even more equal than they are in Sweden. So it's a profoundly interesting study, and I know we'll have a lot of phone calls this hour from listeners who want to respond to this. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And our guest is Professor Michael Norton, Associate Professor of Business Administration in the Marketing Unit at Harvard Business School. He holds a BA in psychology and English from Williams College and a PhD in psychology from Princeton University. He teaches a second-year MBA course, The Art of Marketing Science, and in the Strategic Marketing Management Executive Program. And thank you so much for being with us, Professor Norton. Oh, we got you on this line. Hi, Professor Norton.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good,
you know,
thanks.
I heard this on the radio and I thought, what an interesting study that you've done. What prompted you to look at this issue? And you must have been somewhat surprised by your findings, too.
We were surprised. And I think the first thing that prompted us really was the idea that we seem to be lost in very strenuous and sometimes heated debates about very specific issues. So right now the big debate, of course, is should the Bush tax cuts expire or should they be renewed? And people get, you know, really very angry on either side of the issue about what should happen. But they're kind of specific issues. You know, should this tax cut last for this long and then expire or not? As opposed to asking people kind of a broader question, leaving aside smaller specific issues, what kind of a country would you want to live in? And then once we know those broader questions, try to make policy decisions based on those big ideals rather than on kind of small debates. So we wanted to say at a high level, where do people want to live? And can we use that then to say, what decisions should we make going forward?
Yeah, well, I think that your study is absolutely brilliant. The top 20%, as you say, have 85% of the wealth. Most Americans think what?
They think it's around 60% of the wealth, which seems not that far off, so 85 to 60. But if you think about the total amount of wealth in the United States, as you can imagine, it is a gigantic number. So you're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars that people believe are more equally distributed across Americans than they really are.
And what do you mean by wealth? What is wealth?
Yeah, so we chose to study wealth rather than income deliberately. So income is a easier thing for all of us to understand because we know exactly what our paycheck is and we can kind of see, well, last year I made this much money and this year I'm making this much. So I can get a sense of how much income I'm making and how well I'm doing relative to the past. Wealth has many, many more things in it. So it's your total assets that you have and it includes your debts, so the value of your home, but also the debt that you have in your mortgage or outstanding loans that you have. It's also your investments that you have as well. It's money that you've inherited that you have. So it's a much bigger pile of things that all go together. And the other reason we chose to study wealth is because unlike income, where people can be somewhat mobile over the course of their life and over generations, wealth inequality is very, very static. So people whose great-great-grandparents were wealthy tend to be wealthy now, mm-hmm. and people whose great-great-grandparents weren't tend not to be wealthy now. Income, there's a little bit more mobility across generations.
And yet we do have this. Tell me what you found about this and what you think about this. We do, as Americans, have this idea, don't we, that we are eventually going to be able, probably in our lifetimes, realistically or unrealistically, to get that kind of wealth that perhaps our grandparents had. That we feel
that's
that we're
right.
going to get rich.
That's right. And I think, I mean, so one of the amazing things about America is, in fact, that it's even possible to do that, right? So in many countries, you would never have any chance of ever becoming extremely wealthy starting from poor circumstances. And yet we do know success stories of people in the United States that have done this. The problem is it's much, much, much rarer than people think. So it's people believe that everyone has an equal chance to go from rags to riches. And in fact, it's extremely uncommon. And really what we generally see is where you start is where you end up.
That's true. I'm
sorry. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
I'm just going to say that's true in some sense, whether you work really hard or whether you don't. So sometimes people believe that the reason things don't change is because poor people don't work hard at all. And rich people work hard a lot, and that's why things perpetuate. Mm-hmm. And whether that's true or not, it's also true that if you are very, very poor and you work very hard, it's very hard to accumulate wealth because it's about inherited assets of, you know, homes and things like that. And it's extremely difficult to accumulate wealth over time if you don't start with any to begin with.
Yeah. And where do we get this idea? Is it through our literature, or is it – why is it so much a part of the American idea that we can all get rich? Where do we get that?
I think that a colleague of mine at Harvard, Anat Keenan, has a paper where she shows that Americans in particular really identify with underdogs. She looks at it in the context of brands. So we love brands and companies that started in somebody's basement and then became enormous corporations. It's really part of the American story. And the founders of the country, right, they were underdogs against an enormous empire. So Americans have this very – and not people in every country don't necessarily have this – idea that you can really go from very poor circumstances and somehow break through and become a success. And so across our purchasing decisions and across the belief in our own sort of life course, Americans have a really strong belief that this can happen to us.
The second part of this finding, which is so interesting because it crosses political lines too, which you would believe this couldn't possibly be the case, but it does. Be you rich or poor, Republican or Democrat, people want things to be even more equal than they think they are, which is really more equal than they actually are.
That's right. So as you said, right now in the United States, the top 20% of wealthy people have about 85% of the wealth. People think they have 60% of the wealth, as we said. But when we ask them how much do you think they should have, if you could start from scratch and build a new society, most people say around 35%. So now you're talking about they actually have 85% and they wish they had 35%. 50% of the wealth that the upper 20% have, people wish were more evenly allocated across different income groups and different social classes. But as you said, the most interesting thing is that wouldn't be that useful if, for example, Democrats and Republicans still disagreed vigorously about whether it should be 35% or 50% for very wealthy people. But anybody we ask, so we ask people who voted for George Bush, we asked people who voted for John Kerry, we asked very wealthy people, we asked very poor people. We also can look at whether men and women agree or disagree as well. Nearly everybody believes that the top 20% should have between 30 and 40% of the wealth instead of the 85% they really have.
And is this, are we looking at Sweden as a model of what our ideal is, or is it even more equal distribution of wealth in Sweden?
It's far more. So
it's far more.
Yeah, so even countries that are more – the wealth is more evenly distributed than the United States, the top 20% have much, much more than 35% of the wealth. So even in, you know, what some people would consider to be kind of enlightened or egalitarian societies, other people would call them, of course, socialist societies, even their wealth is much more less distributed than it is – than what Americans want it to be here.
And when people – I know this isn't a part of the study, but take your mind there for a moment. When people say that they want to be in that kind of society, how do they imagine that society would be different and their lives would be different? They would have more stuff, or they would be able to pass along more to their children, or what is it?
My guess is that people believe – so right now the top 20% have 85% of the wealth. The bottom 40% in general in most estimations have 0% of the wealth.
Ooh.
So you're talking about a very unequal society where the rich are very rich and the poor truly are very poor. One of the reasons the bottom 20% have 0% is because many of them have negative net wealth because they're in debt. And I think when we ask Americans, what would you like America to think like, to look like, they think two things. They think, I want there to be some wealth inequality because I do believe that if I work hard, I should be able to move up in the distribution. But I don't think that rich people should have all of the money. And also, I really don't think that poor people should have no money. So everyone, in some sense, literally takes from the rich and gives to the poor. So when we ask them, where would you like money to be redistributed, they'll take it from the top 20% and kind of move it into the middle class and move it into the lower class as well to try to make things a little bit more equal. And I think it is a vision of, yes, we believe in rags to riches, and we'd like to have the opportunity for hard work to pay off rather than have it be equal no matter what you do. But it's too unequal now, and we'd like it to be a little bit more balanced.
So why do you think nobody takes this issue? We're in a heavy-duty midterm election, as you know. Why doesn't somebody take this information and run with it politically, run on a more equal society? How would that play?
I think in general, so the feedback that we've gotten for the work is in some sense that we're advocating wealth redistribution. And as soon as you start talking about wealth redistribution in those terms, then people focus on the unfairness of taking from rich people and giving it away rather than focusing on the other end of it, which is the fairness of, perhaps, of distributing it more evenly. So as soon as you move from the global ideal down to, well, what should we do with specific tax policy, then those very debates that we were trying to go above to say, what do you want your country to look like more broadly, they very quickly become focused on those specific debates again. So it gets right back down to, for this specific tax cut, should it be allowed to expire or should it be renewed? And that's a very hard conversation to change.
Mm-hmm. Michael Norton is our guest this hour. He's done a very interesting study, and it will be in a book soon, about how Americans underestimate U.S. wealth inequality and also asks them to look at the kind of society what wealth distribution would look like in their ideal society. And it turns out that it's even more of a distribution than what currently exists in Sweden. They want even more than Sweden, which is pretty interesting. Michael Norton is Associate Professor of Business Administration in the Marketing Unit at the Harvard Business School. Our phone number, we have one line open if you'd like to join this conversation, 800-486-8655. And I should tell you that we're in a pledge drive as well. This is the last, second to the last hour that we'll ask for support for this particular program. We can ask you to give, please, at 888-202-2552. We do have a goal of 14 new pledges, and we're at 11 right now, which is really terrific, so we can get this challenge for an extra $1,000, which is something that doesn't happen every hour. So pledge this hour, and we thank you on the Ideas Network. And we start our phone calls with Dan in Three Lakes. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. My comments relate more to income than wealth, but just to point out, I believe we're in the second or third year, or that is to say 2009, was that the Forbes top 400 earners had to make a minimum of $1 billion to get in, and the median income in this country is still under $50,000. Well, $1 billion is 20,000 times the median. Why do we have what really amount to, if you eliminate capital gains tax rate, which is 15%, we really only have two tax brackets in this country on income taxes, and you're in why Warren Buffett said, how come my secretary's tax rate is higher than mine? His income is all capital gains. Hershey's in the 35% bracket. He's in the 15% bracket. And on top of that, the big earners in this country are hedge fund managers. John Paulson, no relation to the current guy that's in the government, reported in 2007 $3.2 billion in income.
Professor.
I think so you raise a great issue. One of the problems is that actually wealth inequality is even more unevenly distributed than income. So in fact, as uneven as income is right now, wealth is much, much more unevenly distributed. And the other thing that I'll throw out is the current level of wealth inequality, we have not been at this level since right before the Great Depression. So if you think about wealth inequality actually declined for most of this century, most of the last century, from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and began to increase again above that. I think the broader issue of how has this disparity happened, you're already pointing to specific policies that allow it to happen. I think one of the reasons people don't react more strongly is because for the most part, it's invisible to us. So we're aware that there are people who make a very high level of income, and we're sort of aware that they don't pay taxes, but we don't know them and we don't see them. And people tend to look around at their local neighborhood to figure out how well they're doing with their income and compare themselves locally rather than to a broader group of income earners. And therefore, they're not as, in some sense, upset about the what they believe to be unfairness as we might think they would be.
You write in your study that most scholars agree, and I'm wondering if you're among them, that wealth inequality in this country, there are some estimates suggesting that the top 1% of Americans hold nearly 50% of the wealth. Is that true?
That is true. I think estimates vary between sometimes as low as 30, sometimes as high as 50, but certainly a lot of estimates are between a third and half of the wealth are owned by those people.
Yeah. And what are they doing with all that money? Creating new jobs for everybody?
It's very interesting to think about. So certainly some of them are. So some level of wealth inequality is probably a very good thing because you need, you know, capital to be concentrated to build large businesses and things like that. It's a little bit unclear, really, in some sense, what very wealthy people are doing with their money. There has been a move lately, the caller mentioned Warren Buffett, that wealthier people are giving more and more of their money to charity. So you can think about that as being an interesting form of wealth redistribution as well. And in fact, Americans give an enormous amount of their personal income to charitable causes. We don't usually think about that in terms of being wealth redistribution, and yet in fact it is, right? So we send an enormous amount of money to Haiti to help people in an earthquake, and really that's a strange form of taking wealth that we have and sending it on to people who don't have wealth. Yet when you call those things taxes, people react very strongly because sometimes it isn't their choice to pay taxes. And yet when we let people choose, they'll very, very often choose to redistribute wealth themselves.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dan, for the call. Patrick in Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hello. I had a question as to why the professor chose to deal only with accumulated wealth as opposed to wealth and earned income. I'm a clockmaker. I deal with a lot of extremely wealthy people. At the same time, I deal with what one would term middle-class people. And I find that the middle-class people tend to spend their money, and I don't mean this lightly, but more frivolously than the wealth does. The wealth tend to invest their money, whereas the middle class tend to spend it.
Professor Norton.
So we focused on wealth rather than income in part because wealth inequality is worse or more unequal than income inequality. So it is true that there is income inequality in the United States, but wealth inequality is somewhat different. I'm not sure of the extent to which wealthy and middle class people spend their extra money differently. My guess is that wealthy people have more money because they have more money in general. They both invested more and spend it on frivolous things as well, whereas if you have less income, you may invest some and also spend some on frivolous things. But I'm not sure if there's any data actually that look. It's a very interesting question that looks at how different income levels spend their money differently.
Mm-hmm. We would love to. We should do a series of interviews, one perhaps a month, of people who are, I'm not sure we could get them on the air, people who are in the top 1% to see what they do with their money. That'd be fascinating, mm-hmm. wouldn't it?
That'd be very interesting. Yeah.
We'll see if we can do that. Yeah? What do you think, Chrissy? Rhonda, maybe we can get some of those people. Let's go to Rich next from Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Kathleen. I was wondering if the professor investigated or talked to people not just about wealth, but for most of us, what wealth provides. And what I'm getting at is it's a given that in America, if you talk about European systems of taxation, they'll say that people are essentially taxed to death in Europe. But in a number of places across that continent, people are guaranteed rather generous vacation time, family leave time, access to choices in education that are prepaid, essentially. And in America, we seem to be moving towards a system where if you can't pay for it, whether it's sports in high school, you can't have it. The idolatrous word right now is let's privatize everything. It's sort of everybody is in this on his or her own, and we got to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. But there's a lot of contradiction there, because if you talk to people, particularly politically, about the need for more time with their families and fewer hours at work, there are couples work, both partners working 60 or more hours a week at multiple jobs to keep their heads above water. It's not just wealth and all those zeros we're looking at in the highest brackets, but what wealth represents and whether the survey got at the idea of wealth influences the quality of how we live. It's not just a quantitative measure.
Professor Norton.
It's a very interesting issue, I think. So we did not ask people in some sense why they wanted wealth inequality to be different than it currently is. I think that one of the issues that you raise, which is a very important one, and it can be more important for Americans than for people in some European countries, is the issue of choice. So should I give the government my money and trust that they will spend it wisely on schools and other things that I care about? Or do I believe that I or my local community or my state are better at making those decisions myself? And people within the United States vary widely on that. And that's a debate that goes back to the founding fathers. So rags to riches is one sort of core American belief. And the other one is local versus federal control is another issue that America goes back and forth on for all of American history. I think now the pendulum has swung toward local control is better. So the federal government isn't doing a good job. And so we should get our money back and have our own charter schools and fund our own local initiatives. And it really is in some sense unclear which one is better. There are efficiencies to aggregating money at the level of the federal government and having programs come from there. And there are sometimes advantages to having local control. I think that people get it wrong when they think that it should be always one or always the other. So, you know, the government shouldn't do anything and we should do everything locally is probably wrong. And the reverse is probably wrong as well, that the government should do every single thing and locally we shouldn't make our own decisions. But it's a fine line for policymakers to understand where is the better place to have the money allocated, and then should people make those decisions themselves or should the government make them for them?
Wealth inequality is our topic this hour, and our guest, Professor Michael Norton, Associate Professor of Business Administration in the Marketing Unit at Harvard University, has been looking at the way that Americans perceive wealth, and we don't really have much of an idea of what the wealth gap is in the United States, and we describe a place that is even more equal than Sweden when we look at what our ideal is. It's a fascinating paper and maybe eventually become a book. We'll ask him about that. Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. This is our Wisconsin Public Radio fall membership drive, so we're asking you to give us just a little bit of your wealth, really, in the scheme of things. It's not a lot, just a little bit of your wealth. We need to raise money to pay for these programs so we can talk about issues like this that keep you in the know and entertained and really informed. This conversation should take you a long way. You can have the same conversation with all kinds of people. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 right now to ensure the future of the programs that you count on. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 2552. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. So we have a few fun things going on this hour. That overall goal of 50 pledges, we've heard from 17 people.
All right.
But I'm proud to announce that 15 of those are first-time members of Wisconsin Public Radio. So we got that challenge grant from Herzing University. They put up an extra $1,000 once we heard from 15 new members, which we just did. So that's very exciting. Thank you for those 15 new members. And welcome aboard. For those that haven't pledged yet, you can still do so at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
That's wonderful. That's great. And think about all the conversations that we have here. Many of our listeners become donors out of a sense of social responsibility. They want to make a contribution to the greater good. Don't you love that? We're working for a place that wants to make a contribution to the greater good. If you think of WPR as a shared resource, if you yourself have been getting back a great deal of value out of this over the past year or two or three or four or 20, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, it's time to put something back.
That's right. Make a donation not only for yourself, but also for your community. The Wisconsin Idea and Wisconsin Public Radio's part of that. The amount is up to you. The important thing is that you participate. So please give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed all day long. As you know, you get value from this program, from Joy Cardine, Larry Mueller, Car Talk, Ben Maron's old-time radio drama, and many others you've come to rely on. So,
issues that matter to you, and we bring national and sometimes global issues right to your doorstep. So please go now to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks very much, Rhonda. And just a reminder, too, if you're getting down to the wire and wanted to pledge to this show, this is our last day to come and ask for your support. So please, please move ahead and do it today. Let's go to Michael next. Who's on the road. Hi, Michael.
Michael Crosby. I've been fascinated by this topic and also its relationship to income distribution. But your earlier question, Kathleen, about why don't people seem to want to change things, recalled for me an article that Clarence Page had in the Chicago Trib, and that was replicated by David Brooks in the New York Times about 10 years ago. A survey said that 18 to 19% of people in this country think they're in the top 1%.
Really?
And another 17 or 18% think they will be. So if you got the 1% being the 1%, and then another 36, 37% thinking they are or will be, the possibility, it seems to me, it comes to say, well, ultimately they're saying, I don't want to change the system because ultimately it's going to benefit me, even though it's still, as your speaker is saying, that 1% of the wealth is going to not change. But you've got this thinking that is saying, I'm going to make it someday, so don't change the system. Does he have any comment about any replication of that data that Page and Brooks talked about? I think it came from a Time magazine survey.
But okay.
See if there's any kind of attitudinal similarity.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael. Michael?
Yeah, so it's a wonderful point, and it's very true. So many people now have shown, and we've collected some data ourselves on this. First, if you ask people where they think they are in the wealth distribution, nearly everyone thinks they're better off than they actually are. And if you ask them where they think they can end up, everyone's very optimistic that they can move up in the distribution as well. Also, if you ask them where can your children end up, they're even more optimistic very often. So they believe they'll get ahead in their life, and then that will be passed on to their children, who will get ahead even more. And it can very well be the case that people's standard of living improves over time on average. But Americans seem to believe, as the caller is suggesting, that they won't just get a little bit better over the course of their life, or their children won't, the children's lives won't be a little bit better, that somehow there'll be a sort of stratospheric effect where they'll catapult into being very, very wealthy. And again, that is possible, and we do know stories of people that's happened to, but it's very, very rare. And it relates again to this idea of underdogs and rags to riches. I think that Americans really have a strong belief in that. And by the way, it's a wonderful thing. So Americans start, thousands and thousands of new businesses every year because we have a belief that we're entrepreneurial and things will work out and we can move upwardly in that way. If we didn't have that drive, we might not have become the country that we became. But it can also have other strange effects where we have beliefs that might prove to be erroneous.
I want to go back for just a moment because I'm not sure I get this. When you talk in the paper about Americans possessing this commonly held normative standard for the distribution of wealth, despite the many disagreements about policies that affect the distribution, like taxation and welfare, it seems to me as though that's a very strong disconnect. And I don't fully understand, if we have an idea about what is fair, I don't understand why we have such huge debates and all these terms that we throw around, like socialism and communism and, you know, not the American way. Why, once it gets to the area of politics and distribution, it is so contentious?
It's a fantastic question. So one of the things that we've done recently is if we show people pictures of different wealth distributions. So, you can make a pie chart of the United States so people can see the concentration of wealth. And if we ask people, you know, how much do you like this concentration of wealth? Do you like it or do you not like it? Is it fair? Is it not fair? What we find is that if we leave these we can make them for different countries, so Sweden and Russia and whichever country we like. What we find is that when we leave them unlabeled, people tend to like ones that are quite fair. Or I shouldn't say fair, I should say equal. So they prefer Sweden to the United States, as we show in the paper. When we label the countries, suddenly they prefer the United States and they don't prefer the countries that are labeled as things like Sweden and other countries that we see that many Americans see as too socialistic. So the labels matter a lot. So as soon as you start thinking about, you know, what does this person mean by fair, or which kind of system are we setting this up to be, the old debates again start to come out about, you know, what is fair and who should be taxed and how much. But in the abstract, again, Americans really do agree on what things should look like. And then as soon as you get to a specific issue, these debates begin to emerge. And again, they can get quite heated.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Thanks, Michael, very much for your call. Let's go to Joe in Sturgeon Bay. Hey, Joe.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
This redistribution of wealth is kind of, I think it's way wrong. And I'm at work, so pardon me. I'm a blue-collar worker, and I work in an area where the majority of the homeowners have two, three, or even four homes. And I don't think we're giving credit to the really wealthy people, because I know a lot of these people very well, and they donate a lot and they give a lot. And, you know, they talk about this, how Sweden is good or Europe. If people like it that much, or we should be like Canada, then they should move there. Our country was founded on free enterprise. We have hardworking people who start businesses, hire people, give them bonuses, treat them like family. That's where I work. And every time we have someone talk about redistributing wealth, taking from the rich and giving to the poor, you're burning the people who have it, and they sit there and they go, "Geez, why am I working 80 hours a week anymore?" And I don't have a problem with a social system that gives to people who can't make it on their own. But I know a lot of people who don't want to make it on their own because, if I make more money, I lose my Badger care. They lose all the fringe benefits of being in the poverty level. And I know a lot of kids who are friends with my kids who do go to bed at night without dinner. And, their parents are the victims of a society that gives and has all these programs, and they go, "Well, it's easier to go sit at the bar and drink than it is to go out and work a little harder." I work many hours a week, and so does my wife.
Yeah, but don't you think there are a whole lot of people really in this country, to be fair, who work very hard, Joe, and are having a very hard time making ends meet? Their incomes aren't very great. They work at jobs that don't pay very much money.
Well, I'm sympathetic for those people. I'm empathetic for them. But we can't all be at the top. You know, there was a story that went around a while back, and I don't want to go on too long about it, but it was about a professor who gave a test to everybody. And the test came out, and there were like 10 A's, 10 B's, 30 C's, some D's, and a few failures. And he said, I'm really shocked at this. He goes, tell you what we're going to do. I'll give you the class the option. We'll retake the test, and we'll average a score, and everybody gets the same score. Well, naturally, the A's and the B's said, huh, I don't have to work that hard. I already took the test, and the other people are going to work harder. They're going to help bring the average up. So the people on the bottom said, we got the A's and B's carrying us. I ain't doing a darn thing this time. So they all took the test, and the average is even worse. I mean, we can't all be the same. And we can't.
All right, let's go to Professor Norton. Response, Professor Norton.
I think this is a really important issue, and I think one thing that when we talk about sort of wealth redistribution, or when we ask Americans and they want it more equally distributed than it is, very, very few people say they want it to be perfectly equally distributed. So whether it's extremely liberal people or extremely poor people who you might think are the ones who want, you know, everyone makes exactly the same amount of money and that's fair, almost no Americans endorse that. So everyone believes, you know, from Bush voters, Kerry voters, whoever we ask, that there should be wealth inequality. And I think it's reflecting exactly your concern that we don't want to be in a society where your hard work can't pay off. I think it's really important for people to know that if they work harder than someone else, that they can get ahead and there will be winners and there will be losers. Americans really believe in that. And, you know, philosophically, you can disagree whether that's true or not, but it is an important part of what people are telling us when we ask them what they want America to look like. What we're trying to show is that given that belief that some inequality is good and healthy and reflects American values, how much inequality should there be? And there, people are telling us there's just too much right now than I think there should be. So I still want inequality. I still want to have winners and losers, that some people find that offensive. But Americans are telling us that's what America is all about, is some people end up on the top and some people end up on the bottom. But the number of winners is there's a couple and there's so many losers right now. And that doesn't feel right to me. And somehow I'd like that to be a little bit less that way and a little bit more winners and relatively more losers. But the question of how you accomplish that, which I think you're also raising, is a very, very difficult policy question. So who do you take the money from and why becomes a very difficult thing to start
sure
to think
does.
About once you go from the abstract to the concrete. And I think that's something that policymakers and politicians are struggling with as well. And we don't have the answers either, really, in some sense, how to get things to reflect more what Americans are telling us they'd like them to be like.
Thanks, Joe. Greg in Stoughton, hi.
Yes, let me just lay this up for you. I've got a chart in front of me that gives you the connection between the CEO pay and the average worker pay for countries around the world. In Japan, it's 11 to 1. And it continues going through Germany, 12 to 1, France, 15 to 1. The nearest to the United States is Venezuela, 50 to 1. The United States is 475 to 1. Now, every time they bring up the minimum wage, the person like the one you had before me would say, oh, no, that affects the price of the item. And they would have to raise that to a comment, you know, to help cover that. Or we can't do it because, well, that would just increase the prices for everybody. Yet nobody talks about the CEO pay, which is astronomically out of sight and in nowhere connected with what they do.
Professor Norton.
I think that, again, great point. And I think that there is somewhat of a disconnect between people's awareness of the level of inequality right now. So again, when you present data in these terms, so when you, for example, the wealth inequality in the United States very often resembles wealth inequality in dictatorships. And when you present the data in that way, people say, wait a minute, I don't think the United States should look like a country that's run by dictators. But if you think about it in the abstract, you say, no, I think our system is good and we shouldn't change it. Similarly, if you think about CEO pay, if you just say, you know, CEOs in the United States make more money than average workers, well, that seems right to most Americans, right? So they say, yes, I think that CEOs probably work harder and they deserve to make more money than people in lower ranking jobs. That, again, is what people are telling us when we do surveys. But when you start to talk about the magnitude of those differences is when people tend to start disagreeing quite a lot. So we haven't done this survey, but I would guess if we asked people, if we asked Americans, what do you think the ratio of CEO pay to the minimum wage should be, I would guess that Republicans and Democrats, rich people and poor people, would all have a number that's a lot lower than 475
to 1. Not 475 to 1, yeah. Daryl right. from Couderay, hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Professor Norton and Kathleen. I have a comment and a question.
Can you just question? Because we're almost out of time, Daryl. Sorry. Or the comment, either one.
Well, I'd like not having to worry about having health care. Not having to work, it's something that made me feel like a slave to the system of money. That is, in reality, money made up out of thin air because it is no longer based on a gold and silver standard. It's really just paper we were forced to worship for life. And I wonder if barter would help.
Do we need a whole new system? What do you think, Professor Norton?
I don't know. I think it's unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, we are moving more and more toward a digital age where many goods are virtual instead of physical. I think local communities have, in some sense, instituted more local trade and things like that. So you do see some consumers getting more excited about kind of the tangibility of exchange rather than these big corporations kind of running the show. I don't know. I think it's probably at a large scale infeasible, but it's a very interesting idea to think about.
Yes, it is. So can people get your study? Is this going to be a book?
No plans for that yet. So right now we just have published a paper on this. We're working on other aspects of you know, disagreement and agreement about wealth inequality.
Oh, I think you should do a book on this. I think this is just fascinating. And not many people are talking about it. And it's new information. So I encourage you to do a book.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Michael Norton, Professor Michael Norton, Associate Professor of Business Administration in the Marketing Unit at Harvard Business School, looking at what we think the wealth is in this country, how equally it's divided or not, and what we would like to have it be. Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our studios. This is our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. We're down to the last few moments to ask for your support for this particular program. And giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 keeps this program on the air. And these kinds of conversations, I just think they're really stimulating. Please invest in your future listening by donating now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hey, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. And I just want to thank everyone who called in the new members and pledged to help us get that $1,000 challenge grant from Herzing University. We've heard from 17 new members
great.
This hour.
Wonderful.
That's great, of our 21 pledges. But we still have a goal of 29 more pledges to go to hit that 50 pledge mark. So let's keep hearing from some new members. That was a lot of fun. So let's keep those going. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you decide what the amount of pledge that you can give. We just spent an hour talking about wealth distribution, so some of you will be able to give much more than others. But all contributions, believe me, are so welcome. If you can do $150, then you can have your morning coffee with the Ideas Network 20th anniversary mug, which is, of course, an item that will increase in value as the years go on because it's a historical mug, right? Your 20th anniversary mug. So please put a value on the programming that you enjoy every day. These kinds of conversations, I just find them so interesting. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Just a few minutes left this hour.
A dollar or two a week adds up to about $50 or $100 for the year. And all year long, you're going to benefit from this program and other programs on WPR, Larry Mueller and Joy Cardine, to the best of our knowledge. So make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And like Kathleen said, you can give as generously or as little as you can, whatever works for you.
I listen and contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, and I am an avid fan because Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network programming feeds my head, and the classical music feeds my soul. Thanks, Wisconsin Public Radio, for informing me and enriching my life.
Please pledge WPR.org or 888-202-2552. As we look at income inequality this hour, maybe your gift is $50 or even $10 or $100 or $500. Whatever amount you choose, it's the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I really like that comment. I don't think I've heard that one before. Feeds her mind and feeds her soul.
That's good, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. So that website again, Kathleen, is WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We only have a couple of minutes remaining this hour on Kathleen's last day of this pledge drive, and we still need to hear from 29 listeners to make our goal this hour. So please continue to pledge throughout the news.
Yeah, we sure want to make our goal during the last of our hours to come to you and ask for your support for this program. Think of all the work that Rhonda and Chrissy do in these wonderful shows. And a show on what we think about wealth distribution in this country. I just think that's a very valuable program. And it's not only what we think, what we would like for it to be, how it informs public policy or doesn't inform public policy. It's just, it may sound kind of lofty and dry, but it's really fascinating, I think. It's just fascinating. I was fascinated. Were you fascinated by that?
I was fascinated.
I was fascinated, too. So if you were fascinated, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a lot of things that happen at Wisconsin Public Radio happen behind the scenes. So you don't see the workings on getting the shows prepared to go on the air. So we can deliver some, 2 hours of great radio to you each and every day. But that all costs money. So we come to you every once in a while and ask for your support. So please today log on to WPR.org or dial 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much, Rhonda, for all the work you do. Thanks to Chrissy. Thanks for this very interesting program that Rhonda produced and Chrissy did on-air production. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. Remember, it's our fall pledge drive. We also have an announcement to make, and you'll hear more about this, but we do special things on this show, too. We celebrated Lincoln's 200th birthday, and we are going to Washington, D.C., so we're going to tell you more about that coming up. Well, let's do it next hour. What the heck? Why not? Thanks, everybody.